Welcome to the SK Wealth Management Solutions and Knowledge Podcast, episode 28, and coincidentally, the first one of the new year, 2022. My name is Devin Raynone, a certified financial planner here at SK Wealth Management, where we take an integrated approach to financial planning and investment management to improve your financial lives. Welcome again to 2022. Today is a great time to recap what happened in the financial markets in 2021, and more importantly, to look ahead to see what's expected for the remainder of 2022. I'm joined today by Nat Neeland, our Chief Investment Officer here at SK Wealth Management, to help us make sense of what's happening in the economy and the financial market. So Matt, for the most part, 2021, I think it's safe to say that it was a great year, whether you look at the stock market, the real estate market, private markets, and I even throw in crypto markets for that as well. But more specifically for the stock market, Matt, what in the world happened in 2021?
2021 was actually the second straight year of 20%+ returns for the U.S. stock market. We've not had 20 consecutive years of 20%+ returns since 1995 and 1996. But it's important to keep reminding ourselves that this occurred during the great experiment of reopening the global economy, which included unprecedented fiscal and monetary stimulus. So extreme moves really were not totally unexpected. Another interesting note about 2021 is the stock market volatility was the lowest it's been since the 1960s. Believe it or not, we only had one period in September where there was a 5% drawdown. There was also not very many strong upside moves either. Most upside moves last year were contained to 1% moves. And also, true to form, the September swoon gave way to a Santa Claus rally with the S&P 500 notching up the new highs in the final week of the year. The 11% fourth quarter return for the S&P 500 just put an exclamation mark on a 28% outcome for the year. Results were a bit more mixed in small company stocks, where healthcare was particularly hard hit. But when you looked at large cap growth stocks, which have been leaders for an extended period of time, their extended comeback for the year and in the quarter by virtue of rallying of high market cap information technology stocks and their large weighting in that group. But when we look outside of the U.S., outside of the U.S. stocks, they did not fare quite as well. The broad-based international stock index had a decent year, but was up a little less than half of the U.S. returns. Developed regions were much more aggressive with their tactics to combat various COVID variants and therefore held back their economic activity. The emerging markets were a different story. The regions really struggled with obtaining and distributing vaccines. And because of that, investors tended to stay away. Also, China threw a monkey wrench into the emerging markets too, as their economy slowed because of new restrictions on businesses and uncertainty about future policies. As a result, those regions were down slightly in 2021.
I don't think anyone forecasted what China's economy was going to do in terms of more political regimes being incorporated, but at least domestic markets speaking, it was more preferred in terms of performance. But I'm kind of curious now, because you mentioned we only had one period in September when there was a 5% drawdown. How often would we expect to have at least a 5% drawdown in the markets?
The thing that made that stand out is you look back in history and you can have on average 3-5% drawdowns in a year. And 80% of the years, when we go back all the way back to the 1920s, you average about 80% of the time a 10% drawdown in a year. So that's why last year was really unusual. And it also came after 2020, which was a much more volatile year, as expected, when you had the economy shutting down and then attempts at reopening it, where volatility both to the upside and downside were much more active.
So in terms of sector performance for 2021 with the stock market, it seems like energy, financials, and real estate, for the most part, were the best performing. Is that right? Or are there any other sectors, I guess, besides those two that had a better performance?
It was an interesting year because a lot of things did not follow the pattern that we've seen over the last dozen years. And you're right. Energy was a big beneficiary of the bounce back in the economy, the reopening of the economy. And it was primarily driven by oil prices. Oil prices came back strongly in 2021 and really brought the energy sector back to life. A lot of those stocks have just really languished for a long period of time over the combination of falling energy prices and this transformation of clean energy initiatives that are going on. Financials have been, had mixed performance over the last few years, but the whole thought there is that this whole fear of rising interest rates, where a lot of the market gets nervous of higher borrowing costs, those higher borrowing costs really benefit the financials, particularly the banking industry. That really played into their hands nicely as far as stock market performance. gains from that standpoint. And then real estate is a mixed bag, because if you look at real estate, there were portions of real estate that did really well. I think we all know there's Amazon warehouses cropping up everywhere. There's warehouses cropping up all over the place. So there's certain sectors of real estate that have bounced back, and there's others that have really been left behind. And we don't know if they're going to be permanently left behind yet. But in general, the sector had a bounce back from, which was a tough year of 2020.
It seems like there were more sectors that were more sensitive to the economy and the reopening trade for the most part, and other areas of the market, such as, and technology has always been a very great sector over the past how many years with the interest rates being so low. But, you know, it was nice to see a transition for once, I guess, of a value trade versus a growth trade. But as always, you know, the stock always gets the headlines on the news. From the bonds of last year, it seems like it was a completely opposite spectrum, whether it's more domestically focused or internationally focused. So what happened?
2021 turned out to be the perfect storm for the bond market, both U.S. and internationally. It was dogged by high inflation and fears of continued inflation, fears of higher interest rates as a result to combat that higher inflation. And at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a synchronized coordination of central bankers across the globe. Everybody said, okay, we're going to take every tool out of the toolbox and provide as much stimulus as possible. And what's happened in 2021 is we started to get a divergence of central bank policy, where certain countries were more aggressive on raising interest rates or reducing stimulus versus others. And that uncertainty really pervaded a lot of the period of last year, and it left investors concerned about what's next. Uncertainty is never good for any markets. And so the combination of those things really led to the worst bond market performance in over 20 years. Just to give you an example, the U.S. bond benchmark was down 1.5% last year, and the international bond benchmark was a disaster and was down over 8%.
That's a pretty wide dispersion. That's 6.5% between the domestic bond markets and the international bond markets. Do you happen to know when the last time that occurred was? Obviously, 2020 and 2021 are kind of not your average year, but when was the last time that both those bond markets had that wide of a dispersion in terms of returns?
I had a hard time finding a period where there was that much of a dispersion. Part of it was the setup to where interest rates are. If you look in places like Europe and Japan, they have negative interest rates all the way out past 10 years for their government debt. It's unusual to be starting in that environment. So even little incremental moves in interest rates have a bigger impact than they would in other places that are starting off at a little bit of a higher level, like the United States. So it really is a very unique environment that we experienced. And it's going to be interesting to watch this trend going forward, because there's some new economic realities that are taking place at different stages across the globe.
So you mentioned Japan and Europe predominantly are in negative interest rate territory. And Chair Powell, he would never want to see the bond markets or the interest rates go into negative territory, but do you ever expect that interest rates in America would go below zero?
I think it was easier to think that that could happen prior to what happened in 2021 with the inflation and supply chain issues. I think that there was a real worry that that could have been the case, and there was great concern about that. But I think now the recent information that's been put out by the Fed, the talk about their change in policy toward combating inflation with one of their main tools that they have is raising short-term interest rates, I think the chance of going to negative interest rates in this country has become much more remote.
We received a whole summary for 2021 in terms of consumer price inflation ranging over 7%, which is the highest since 1982. So it kind of sets up a nice transition into the next question, Matt. Looking into 2022, what does the economic landscape look like right now?
The global economy heading into 2022 really moved into the new year with hopes of a return to normalcy and fears that it will once again be delayed. And that looks like that's what's happening. But when you look specifically at economic growth, GDP looks stronger for the fourth quarter than it was in the third quarter. You look at jobless claims, they're back to healthy levels. And e-commerce sales are actually running about 40% ahead of pre-COVID levels, while even brick and mortar retail sales are about 14% above that level. We'll soon get our final numbers for 2021, but it looks like we're going to have a very strong bounce back year with GDP growing around 5.6%. And to put things in perspective, that's the fastest economic growth since the early 1980s. When we look into 2022 here, we expect growth to start to slow to around a 3.5% to 3.9%. And then as we extend on into 2023, the forecast is for about 2.5% growth. But while growth is slowing in 2022, the economy is still expected to be growing at twice the rate it was growing before the pandemic. So when I look at the economic themes for 2022, there's a few of them here. One is a new era of reduced or eliminated fiscal and monetary stimulus. So this is a big change. We've gone from extreme stimulus to actually taking that stimulus away. So we'll be watching that closely. The other is how this economic growth story plays out, because it could be uneven. We know it is going to slow down. It's natural for the largest economy in the world to slow down to a more normal growth pattern. What we're also seeing is these various variants of COVID acting as like a governor on growth. So you get periods of time where you start to feel like, oh, things are well, and then a variant shows up, and then it kind of puts a little bit of the brakes on it. So we'll be watching that as well. The other thing when it comes to growth, I think what we're going to find is that it's going to be highly unequal among countries and regions. I think there's going to be certain places that are going to be bouncing back quicker than others. I think outside of the U.S., there's going to be some interesting opportunities there. As we mentioned before, as far as some of the changes that are going on in China, they're about to come to a new election. Will Xi Jinping declare himself emperor for life, in a sense? What we're going to see is China is going to continue to have slowing growth in the first half of 2022, and that will have an impact on the markets as well. Other themes are supply chain disruptions. We're already starting to see them ease, but it's going to be a slow process. I think the first half of 2022 is going to be dominated by dealing with these supply chain disruptions and getting products to market. As a part of that, inflation is going to slowly ease off. We had the December number, which was inflation growing at 7%, which is the highest we've seen since the early 1980s. But that's going to be a big theme for watching the markets, is what is the inflation story. As a result of that, too, my final theme here to mention is that interest rates will go up slowly. They already have, but it's been even a tough start to the bond market in 2022. We've had 8 straight days to start off the year with interest rates moving higher. I don't think it's going to be something that will disrupt, but it will be something to keep an eye on from borrowing costs and general level of interest rates.
Let's pick on a few of those economic themes for 2022. Why is high inflation causing such concern among investors right now?
Inflation is on the forefront of every investor these days, and rightfully so. We use artificial intelligence software to help us track themes and words that are commonly used by investors. It's a great way to track sentiment and, more importantly, shifts in sentiment. And inflation has been in the top 5 of mentioned themes since the beginning of last year. If you go back just to August of 2020, the Federal Reserve unveiled a new framework designed to combat a world of persistently low unemployment and even lower inflation, which now we find ourselves facing a world of high inflation and falling unemployment. So much for the Fed's economic forecasting crystal ball. The Fed has retired the word transitory to describe their views on inflation, and they've admitted that some of the drivers of price rises have persisted longer than they had expected. Conventional wisdom is that higher inflation must equate to a market correction. But I went back, and history doesn't necessarily support that view, especially if the central bankers stay on their slow-moving policy path. And that's something that they've been very cognizant of the last 10, 15 years, really, of not making rash, quick policy changes. They're doing it more of a slow motion. And if you look at that, historically, expectations of higher inflation tend to enhance growth in the short term. And therefore, you see the stock market actually perform pretty well in that environment. For the financial markets and for companies, they want some form of inflation. It's much more preferable than having deflationary forces in the economy. But with this information, we're seeing some signs that inflation is slowing down already, particularly in the energy front. But it's something that's going to be a major theme that we'll be watching throughout 2022.
In 2021, it seems like there are various types of inflation, for the most part, that were completely exacerbated, but there were other parts of inflation that were increasing not as much. When I think of these various types of inflation, I first think of lumber last year in 2021, where it was almost up by over 100 to 200%. And then over time, it started to come back down. And that's one form of inflation where I'm like, okay, that pretty much can't last forever. I think it's pretty much back down to what it was beforehand. But then you have other types of inflation where it seems like it's more sticky inflation versus sporadic inflation, I like to call it, even though maybe sporadic inflation is the best way to phrase it. But it's a great stage for the financial markets in 2022 and the bond market, more importantly. So what are your expectations and thoughts on the bond market after what you mentioned, a pretty rough year for bonds in 2021?
After a rough 2021, bond investors in general were kind of hoping for calm in 2022. So far, they have not received that. Investors starting this year, really, when you look at them, investor sentiment really guides things. And we always forget sometimes that behind the financial markets are humans. Even though there's a lot of computerized trading going on, there still are humans, and humans become emotional when it comes to investing. And It seems like we see everybody kind of shifting to one side of the boat here, that the Fed is kind of behind the eight ball here as far as combating inflation. We've even seen more recently that after reading the Fed minutes, suddenly investors, instead of listening to the words of the Fed chair back in late December that they would raise interest rates three times starting in the summer, now they've completely shifted and said, oh, well, inflation's running out of control and that they're going to start raising interest rates in the first quarter here in March of this year. So that's a big theme change here as well, in addition to the fact that they've talked about speeding up the reduction of their bond buying program. And just to put that in context, what that means is the Federal Reserve has been going out to add cash to the market, is buying bonds from investors, mainly some of the large banks and Wall Street firms, and then that cash gets put back into the economy. So looking to reduce that as well. So with this kind of this mentality, I mentioned the first 8 days of interest rates going up, most bond sectors are negative to start the year. But a lot of this is happening very quickly. Like we see a lot of things happen very quickly in the markets these days. And I think the investors have overreacted to the central bank policy at this point in time. And if you look back in history, investors do panic when you see a policy shift from central bankers, most notably when they go to raising interest rates. That tends to cause a near-term shock where you see the markets get disrupted. Even the stock markets can get disrupted or add more volatility for a short, 1 to 2 month period. And then things calm down. And I think that's what's going to happen here for the bond market. I think things are going to calm down. I think interest rates have risen to a level that a lot of us expected them to reach toward the end of 2022 here in the first quarter. So I think you're going to have more interest rate stability, and that will be a better environment for bonds than we had in 2021. The thing that we're very cognizant of with managing our portfolios is that because interest rates are still low, even when the Fed gets done this year with whatever interest rate rising they do in the short term and the markets respond to that, you're still going to be at historically low levels of interest. And that means income is going to be at a premium. We started this years ago with using different bond strategies. And last year, we even looked at income substitutes and we added those into the portfolio because that's going to be very important to have those in a portfolio to complement the challenges that are there for bonds.
One of the key themes of 2021 was income is at a premium when you're talking about the bond markets. I think the old days of going out and buying a bond directly from the government, the federal government, I think how you mentioned it before, you need to be a little bit more sophisticated, enhanced fixed income and have different types of income, whether it's issued from municipalities, companies that are a little bit riskier in terms of credit, or bonds that have a convertible kind of sweetener attached to them, and even some international bonds that can enhance income and returns. Are bonds still worth it to have in a portfolio?
It's a topic that comes up with investors, quite a bit, and we hear it from clients. And to some degree, that question makes a lot of sense. Because if you look at some of the traditional ways, for years and years, when we were in a different interest rate environment where interest rates are higher, it was pretty simple. You would just say, okay, I want some safety and diversification. I could buy U.S. Treasury bonds. I could buy the highest rated corporate bonds or municipal bonds, and that would be fine. You didn't really have to be creative at all.
all
in managing the bond side of your portfolio. And if you look at a period from the early 1980s all the way into the 2010 and beyond, we were in a long period of falling interest rates, which was also very supportive for bonds. It really was a totally different world than we're in today, where, as you mentioned, you really have to look at a lot of things. You know, another category that we've added over the last few years is floating rate bonds there that benefit from interest rates going higher. Last year, they were one of the best performing sectors out there. They've already started off this year in a good place. And it makes sense based on where the central bankers of the world have telegraphed where they think their interest rate policy is going to head. But because of the fact that you can use multiple strategies, it's not just, and as we joke, your grandfather's bond portfolio, that we can use different types of bonds, different sectors, that we can still get income and diversification. But as I mentioned before, it's not going to be able to do it alone. You have to look at other income producing type strategies in order to recreate some of the benefits that we got from traditional bond portfolios.
So long and short, yes, makes sense to me. Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit, because as much as we can talk about bonds until we're blue in the face, stocks, on the other hand, are coming off of two great years of fantastic returns. So what are your thoughts on the stock market in 2022?
We talked earlier about the solid economic background for 2022, and that will in itself be very supportive for stocks. But another big driver for stock prices is corporate earnings. Last year, we saw broad-based growth in earnings, and overall earnings was a phenomenal growth of 25%. I'd love to see that every year, but that was also heavily influenced by the great reopening of the economy. So we have to put that in context of where that growth came from. But I expect earnings in 2022 to be lower than that, which makes sense, but still at a healthy level. I think that you could see right now we're projecting corporate earning growth between 8% and 10%. And if we get that, that would be a very healthy year and very supportive for stocks. The other thing to do is a look at stocks is the health of corporations. And when you look at corporate balance sheets, they're very healthy. They refinanced a lot of debt when interest rates went really low post-COVID. If you look at the balance sheets as well, they hoarded cash during that period of time. So corporations financially are in very strong shape here. And there's other good news for stock investors as well. Companies now are back, not only just issuing dividends, but they're also seeing more announcements about dividend increases. And also, companies are back in the buyback game. So meaning that they've announced over $1 trillion worth of stock buybacks, programs where they buy back their own stock in order to keep it at a certain level or provide additional support. So that's in a sense, a huge buyer that's been announced out there for the stock market. So the combination of that, bodes pretty well. Another area that I'm bullish on is stock markets outside of the U.S. If you look at the valuation gap of where international stocks are versus the U.S. stock market, it's the widest we've seen in decades. And these economies outside of the U.S. are really starting to heal at a faster pace now, which I think will be really supportive of it. But I'm not just bullish on a broad-based approach. I'm not saying let's just go out and buy the international stock index. I think you really need a very targeted approach because, as I mentioned before, I think the growth of economies, the rebound in corporate earnings across the globe is going to be uneven. So you really need to take a tactical approach to these markets. Overall, the combination of these things leads me to believe that stock market investors can have solid returns in 2022.
So for international markets specifically, are you more bullish on emerging market economies, international, like in Europe? Or is there any country in specifically that you're really bullish on?
So on paper, the emerging markets look very attractive. Mm. But on paper doesn't always work when it comes to investing because it's sentiment there too. Sentiment has really been negative toward the emerging markets because it's just fear of a different variant coming along and again holding back their growth. But from a valuation standpoint, it does look attractive. We're not increasing our weighting to the emerging markets. I think it's at an appropriate weighting right now, but I think it could be a reasonable year for returns. It could be one of the leaders in returns next year, but it won't be easy. I think, as I mentioned before, China, I think the first half of next year is definitely going to be still challenging for Chinese stock market investors. India is a different story. I think they had a decent 2021. And I think that the stage is set there for the continuing healing from the effects of the pandemic. But I think there's other places as well. I think you're going to see Europe is in a much better environment heading into 2022. And I think even Japan is in a much better environment. There's a lot of situations, a lot of companies that we're looking at in these regions that look like they're prepared for a bounce back year. And dollars have not been flowing there. So if you start to get momentum in some of these markets, you'll start to see some follow through investor dollars come in that will also be supportive of a move to the upside.
For focusing in on 2022, what are some of the key themes and strategies that you're really focusing in on outside of everything you've mentioned already?
Pandemic variants may be an ongoing part of our lives forever. We have to just be prepared for that. More importantly, the impact on consumers and investor sentiment, because that's going to add to market volatility as they continue to evolve. The other thing I mentioned is watching inflation closely. A lot of people will ask about what should we do, I mean, from an investor standpoint, from inflation. And some of the places that you may think would be good places as hedges against rising inflation aren't necessarily as good as you think. Some people will ask about gold. If you look at gold, it really has not been a good hedge versus inflation. Even commodities, as a whole, there's different parts of the commodities market that can be helpful, but not, as a whole, it's not always that case, which is interesting because the best hedge against inflation is stocks and has been for a while. And there's different sectors of the stock market better than others, but you know, that's something that, you know, we will be paying close attention to as far as how we shift strategies. And then also central bank policy. As I mentioned, the divergence across the globe between central bank policy is very important. But one of the old cliches in the market is it's not the first rate hike move higher. It's the last move that matters. So it's meaning, what is the end game for the Federal Reserve or other central banks? As they call it, a terminal rate. Where is their target end rate going to be? Does it keep moving higher? That's a negative. If it's where they say it is or around where they say it is, that's still a healthy environment for the markets. But we'll be looking at that quite a bit going forward. And volatility. Volatility is back in the game in 2022. We've already seen it so far in just the first few trading days. But I think this combination of this changing in stimulus, the variant still lingering, and the economy still trying to reopen and get back to some normalcy, you're going to see stock market volatility or financial markets volatility get back to more normal levels. That's not necessarily a negative. It creates opportunities, but it also makes us more cognizant about managing and making sure that our downside risk protections we built into the portfolio are appropriate. And then the last theme I'll just mention, we have midterm elections this year. It's going to make it harder for the White House to pass legislation because with midterm elections, there's going to be less and less of senators and congressmen that and women that are willing to put themselves out there in a vote or a controversial vote. I went back and looked in history, and from a market perspective, there has never been a 12-month period of negative returns following a midterm election. That's good news. Not to say that the road to getting to that election won't be a little bit rocky, but it's good to know that in general, the markets don't have an overreaction one way or the other to midterm elections.
To sum up, I think sometimes the best piece of advice is to not panic and just stay on course and not do anything. This has been fantastic, Matt. Thank you so much for recapping 2021 and then recapping 2022 and your thoughts going forward on the markets. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the SK Wealth Management Solutions and Knowledge Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to all of our podcasts on all the various podcast sites and our website, skwealth.com. Have a great day.